Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Film, the ones and twos. Special guest today, Miss
Carolyn.
Miss Ohio.
Miss Ohio, Carolyn Grace Williams.
We're excited to have her.
No relationship to Jason. I checked, but I felt like he would have mentioned before that he's related to Miss Ohio, and he didn't.
We are looking forward to
it. You all know you want to hear Jason interview Miss Ohio, right?
So we're looking forward to having Caroline Grace because, you know, it's probably good to get away from politics with our guest this week, given how much stuff is going on in politics. We start the week with U.S. Senator Rob Portman from right here. That seems like 3 weeks ago as we record here on Thursday. But the week started right out of the gate Monday morning with him announcing.
Your scoop.
Oh, thank you.
Him announcing.
Thank you very much.
That he's not going to run again. I mean, my mouth was agape. And, I mean, people were, like, posting on social media, like, whoa. And I was like, yeah, that's the word I thought first, too.
Yeah. And it's just been a frenzy and pretty wild speculation about who's going to run to replace him, and that the reason why he made that announcement now, very similar to when George Voinovich announced that he was not going to run again. He did it in January with still 2 years left on his term to allow for the party to find someone or some people to run and, you know, build their campaign and not drop it at the last minute. So Rob Portman does the same thing.
We're 4 days later, and one of the state reporters posted an Excel spreadsheet today on Twitter of, like, all of the people who said they're running are being mentioned as running for that seat now. And it was so long, it barely fit in, like, the photograph.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I was talking to a Washington, D.C., political person yesterday, and we were just sort of talking about how do you get your arms around this, and every time you turn around someone's name's being mentioned, and you know, it obviously it's still really in the immediacy after the news, but at some point here you got to cut through it all and who's really serious candidates. And if I were to say, you know, let's talk about the Republican side real quick, it all depends on Northwest Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan. You know, a big Trump supporter. Donald Trump loves Jim Jordan. He's really became a star because of Donald Trump.
He's on the Sunday morning shows all the time. Like, I really feel like I've gotten to know him that way. Instead of, like, being an Ohio citizen and seeing what he's doing here, which, of course, you know, he's not in this area with us.
Right.
But I have seen him on the national stage more than in his current role.
And he really sort of emerged on the stage during impeachment as he was the House's, I believe he's the ranking member, the top Republican on the, I believe it was the Judicial Committee for the House. So that's sort of where he made his name. And it all depends. So many people in the political world are saying it all depends on him. If he decides to run, he's the hands-down favorite and probably clears the field for the most part. But if he decides not to run, you're going to have a really super nasty primary. You're probably going to have a primary either way. But if he runs, it's going to scare some top people away. But if not, it's going to be a lot of people are going to get in that race. It's going to be nasty. It's going to be expensive.
I mean, I expect it to be a Georgia redo. What we just saw in Georgia in the last months of last year into January with those runoff elections for the Senate seats that the two Democrats did capture, you know, evenly balancing out the Senate with Kamala Harris being that deciding vote, all eyes are going to be on that race. And that's going to be national money flooding in here and national attention. So whoever's going to do it is going to be in, you know, more than a spotlight that's on That's So Cincinnati and written about by Ohio newspapers.
So, you know, from the Republican side, you also have former state treasurer Josh Mandel, who dropped out of the race against Sherrod Brown in 2018. We haven't really heard it's never been made public the reason why he dropped out. And so if he has told the Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com, that he's interested in running again or potentially interested, So if he comes back, it'll be interesting to ask him, you know, that question's going to be posed to him and where he goes from here. He's sitting on, I believe, $4 million still, $5 million, somewhere between $4 and $5 million. So that automatically would make him a pretty, you know, serious top candidate.
Here's my favorite thing about Josh Mandel, real quick. When he was Ohio treasurer, he created something called Ohio Checkbook, mm-hmm. where governments can voluntarily put their spending online, and it is searchable at ohiocheckbook.com. You can go, you see if your city's on there, and Cincinnati was on there, wasn't on there, long story there, is back on there. And you can just see the spending that your government's doing. It's like by the check and by who it was written out to, the exact amount. You know, from amount into anyway. Sorry, I did not mean to detract, but that is how I know Josh Mandel the best, because is a pretty amazing transparent system.
And then you have there's talk about Ohio Republican Party Chairwoman Jane Timken, who we've had here on the podcast from Cincinnati. Just an amazing fundraiser, understands the ground. I mean, she is such a key figure in why the Republicans are so dominant in this state, because she understands what they call in politics the ground game, and you know, the knocking on doors and mailers and how to really target voters, and you know, out in Southeast and Eastern and Southern and rural parts of Ohio, small towns. So if she jumped in, she would be a top candidate as well. And then one other candidate is Southeast Ohio Congressman Bill Johnson. So I honestly think if Jim Jordan runs, he is the next senator. If he doesn't run, then probably your next senator in Ohio is Josh Mandel, Bill Johnson, or Jane Timken. Those are really the top four candidates that of all the names I'm hearing.
Republican side, I mean, we're also, of course, hearing the Democratic Party. They're like, we're organized. We've got this. We have good candidates. We're taking the seat has really been, you know, what they're saying. But I think we just saw like one of the big national prognosticators say reliably Republican. I can't talk today. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I wrote my column the other day about, look, you know, social media. If you were to look at that, it looks like, oh, this is everyone's starting from scratch and it's an equal race and the Democrats have a great shot. And that's not really the case. Go ahead.
It's such a big test for the Ohio Democratic Party. They are coming off David Pepper, previous podcast guest, leaving as the party chair for the state, the Democratic Party chair. And there's a new chair, Liz Walters, up from Summit County. She's a Summit County councilwoman.
Yeah.
They have a metro government up there. She's being thrown into the fire, because the question now is, will the Democrats, will there be a primary, or will they all kind of get behind one candidate and put all of their muscle and money, you know, into just one person in really trying to capture this seat? And it's hard to know where that's going to shake out at this point, because it's the same as the Republican side. Like, this person's interested. Other people are saying, well, what about this person? And it's a lot of speculation there of who's going to be that candidate.
Yeah, I don't want to spend a lot of time on the Democratic side, because the Democrats, they're huge underdogs in this race. They're going to be huge underdogs. The National Democratic Party has all but abandoned Ohio, so they've taken their money and their resources, and they're focused more on Georgia and Texas and Arizona. Those are the new battleground states. Ohio is no longer the bellwether that it once was. And you know, Ohio, you know, the Democrats, the National Democrats now look at it more as Indiana than they look at it as—
Oh, I think they'll be back for this race.
Maybe. There's still 34 Senate seats up next year. There's only going to be so much money that can go around. And I think the Democrats will have a solid candidate, but none of their candidates have statewide name ID, and that's a real problem. That's a real problem for them going in and starting out in a U.S. Senate race to not have anyone on their side who has statewide name ID. They have a lot. They have not a lot, but they have a few talented, candidates or potential candidates in Nan Whaley, the Dayton mayor, Tim Ryan, the congressman from Northwest East Ohio. Danny O'Connor, Franklin County recorder, ran for Congress a few years ago. There's talk about Amy Acton, the former state medical director. And when it comes to statewide name ID, she would have that. But she's never been in politics before, so let's not get too giddy about that, because I think she would run into a lot of problems when you get out into the small towns, the rural areas. And I think any Democratic candidate's going to have that problem right now with the way the state's been trending. I mean, for goodness sake, Tim Ryan didn't even win his own county, home county, in his last congressional race, 10-time congressman from the Mahoning Valley, but lives in Trumbull County and lost that portion of his congressional district last time. So if you can't win your own home county, and this also is a guy who ran for the president, if maybe you're not aware of that. I've forgotten about it.
I remember. I went to college with Tim Ryan.
Yeah, going to be really tough on the statewide scale for the Democrats. I think they have some talented candidates. I just listed potential candidates. But they also have a governor's race to make a decision on who's going to go for that and who's going to go for the Senate. And when you're starting out with no candidates who have any statewide name ID, that's a real problem. And you cannot underestimate that name recognition. And when you're going out into all these small towns and, you know, rural areas, and there's very few people that you can bring up in politics in this state and say, you know, and I'm talking about on state politics, and you could say, oh yeah, I recognize the DeWine name. Whaley, who's that? Ryan, what?
I think that you're going to hear a lot when we talk about Nan Whaley as a candidate, and John Cranley, of course, today. You've been writing about this for a year, but like raising $500,000 for the governor's race is like nothing says I'm all in like that. I think we're going to hear a lot of them try and, you know, tell their stories, not only about themselves, but about their cities. You know, Nan's could probably talk about, you know, the adversity that Dayton has overcome with the shooting and the tornadoes. And just there was so much there and how she guided the city through that. And John Cranley himself, you know, you could tell in the last State of the City speech, which we didn't have one last year because of the pandemic, but the year before that, his State of the City speech was, you know, a trial balloon for governor. The Cincinnati miracle was kind of the running theme there. And I think we're just going to really see this, you know, Dayton versus Cincinnati, who has a better story to tell.
I'm going to go with John Cranley on that one. The city of Cincinnati has been one of the few cities in the state that's really, I think, had some good growth. And John Cranley, a pro-business mayor, has some things to celebrate and to tell. Nobody knows who John Cranley is across the state. Nobody knows who Nan Whaley is across the state. I'm talking about the entire state of Ohio. And so that's the big challenge. But you certainly look at a John Cranley, and just if you take him on the surface, is a really good a general election candidate. He's pragmatic. He's pro growth. He's pro business. He knows how to relate to the working class folks. He knows what to talk about. He said it right here on this podcast a month ago that he's not for banning fracking. So he understands what's important to Southeast and Eastern Ohio and the voters in those regions who are incredibly critical. And the thing about the Democratic Party that I know they know how to do math, but they seem to maybe ignore it. A majority of the voters in this state live in the rural and small towns, and that always overcomes and overtakes the urban county votes. And so there's a lot of work for the Democratic Party to do outside of the three C's, and I just—
It's a big state. You know how I know that? Because I'm from Youngstown, and I still go visit my parents, and it is— there's no getting around it. 5 hours. Yep. And that does cross people's mind when they talk about running statewide, because they know, get in the car. David Pepper famously kind of became a thing at the time that he did it. He was running, I think, for state auditor. He had an RV to do it. And I took throughout the state because you could just get work done and everything because you are in the car. But anyway, it's a big state.
Pull off in a rest stop, sleep, wake up in the morning, and have an early morning campaign event.
Right? I wrote a story about that. It's somewhere in the archives.
Nice. Anyway, I can go on about that for a long time because I've...
Oh, but you know what? Here's the beauty of it. We have 2 years to do it.
Yeah, thanks, Senator Portman. Appreciate that. 2 years of speculation and talking about this. No, it certainly makes for our jobs even... You know, thought it was already going to be a crazy political year, and it just got crazier. So stay tuned to Cincinnati.com. Our Columbus team is all over this. I'm working it, and you know, I know Scott Wortman's keeping tabs. So we'll have all the latest on this story as it unfolds. And yeah, one more thing I want to say is and he's still going to be around for two more years, but I want to wish Senator Portman the best. I know he's been criticized for his, you know, I called it playing footsie in my column the other day with Donald Trump for 4 years.
You have a way with words.
But, well, thanks. You know, he's a well-meaning, you know, committed to policy, committed to decorum, and, you know, a true – I know it gets overused, but you know, he was there for all the right reasons. And then this thing with Donald Trump came about. And, you know, I've had a lot of conversations with people, and some people say, oh, he should have stepped up. And some people will call it not having a backbone. And some people say, and even Democrats will say, you know, maybe that just – maybe it was a real struggle for him. And I'm just saying what people – what I hear from folks. And but ultimately, I just – want to say that, you know, he's been in Washington for 30 years, and, you know, I think that the entire body of work, Tom Sinan, the chief of Newtown, wrote a really nice Facebook post about Senator Portman and the work that he's done on the opioid crisis. And so you certainly hope that when it's all said and done, a public servant like that is looked at for the entire body of his work. And certainly Part of that is his relationship with Trump, but that's not everything with him. So anyway, two more years with the senator, Senator Portman, and then see where it goes from there. Let's jump over and bring on our special guest, Miss Ohio, Caroline Grace Williams. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Pleased to welcome our guest this week. Let's break away from politics for a little bit.
Who, us?
Who, us? And welcome, Miss Ohio.
Thank you,
Miss
so much
Ohio,
for having
Caroline
me.
Grace Williams. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm so excited to be joining you guys on this podcast.
So, you know, I came across your Instagram, and the fact that you are working on Smart 911 is kind of your platform as Miss Ohio. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute, because that has become, you know, near like 911 is a very big issue in Cincinnati after the death, the sad death of Kyle Plush, and all the ways you can use 911 and voice and everything. And I was like, that is such a good topic. And so, but we want to introduce you first, and we'll get to that issue later.
Yeah, of course.
Tell us a little about you. You're a Miami University alum, undergrad and graduate school. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes. So I went to Miami University for undergrad, and I graduated in 2017 with a double major in music and theater. And then I started working at Miami as a admission counselor. And then while I was working there full-time as an admission counselor, decided to go back and get my master's of education while I was there. So I joke that I've done everything you can do at Miami. I have a lot of love and honor. I like went there for undergrad, graduate, and worked there. So I'm definitely a big Red Hawk fan.
You know, so you grew up in Tennessee, you said earlier to us. What drew you to Miami?
Yeah, so I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, and then I moved to Ohio when I went to college, and honestly just fell in love with it and never left. growing up, I always wanted to be different. And I felt like college was a time where you could really challenge yourself and get out of your comfort zone. And I found Miami University and just fell in love with the campus. And nobody from my high school really went there. And I wanted to go by myself and, you know, like I said, challenge myself, get out of my comfort zone, and felt like Miami was a place that I could really grow and never looked back. So that's how I ended up in Ohio. And then now I say, you know, I'm an Ohioan by choice because I chose to be here. It means more.
What? So how were you in the pageants before Miss Ohio when you were growing up, or is it just something new when you moved to Ohio?
Yeah, I would no. It, exactly, it was something that was completely new when I moved to Ohio. So growing up, I did perform. Like I said, I was a music and theater major. So the idea of being on stage and performing wasn't abnormal to me. Like, I loved performing. I loved being on stage. So that aspect of Miss Ohio, you know, like public speaking, kind of always being on stage, it wasn't a foreign concept. But when I was at Miami, my little and my sorority encouraged me to do the Miss Oxford competition. And, you know, the way she pitched it to me is she said, you need a talent, you need an interview, and you have to have an issue that you advocate for, and you win scholarship money. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like it's really me. So the first year that she asked me to participate, I actually chickened out the week before and pulled out of the competition. And I was like, I can't do it.
Oh my gosh.
Then the second year was my senior year. And I definitely had that senior attitude. And I was like, ah, whatever. It's a bucket list item. You know, like, if anything, I can just look back and say, I competed in a pageant once. So I went in and everything kind of fell into place. So I did a lot of work with my church in Oxford. And I, you know, used some of the projects I had done with them as my social impact initiative and the issue that I took on as an individual. Because when you compete for Miss Ohio, you have to have an issue that you advocate for. And then I had a talent song because I was, you know, practicing for my senior voice recital. I had a dress because I wore my recital dress, and everything just kind of fell into place.
All right. So real quick, give me shout outs. What sorority were you in and what church did you go to?
Yes. So when I was in Oxford, I went to Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. I loved it. I sang in the choir and it was awesome. And then when I was in college, I was at Chi Omega.
What was your talent song?
My talent song was O Mio Babbino Caro, and it's an Italian aria.
And when it came time, so let's not jump ahead, because you did perform, I think, at one of the big pageants with the Miami University Symphony Orchestra. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. So you do Miss Oxford,
right? You're a senior. You do Miss Oxford.
Yep.
Did you win?
Yeah. And
did you win?
I literally was walking off the stage thinking that was fun. Like, you know, time to get back to reality. And they announced my name as the winner, and I won Miss Oxford, and I won a $500 scholarship. And I didn't even realize what that meant. And it meant that I, you know, won the prelim to go to Miss Ohio. So I went and competed at Miss Ohio for the first time in 2017 and, you know, made the top 10 and got about $3,500 worth of scholarship and really just fell in love with the idea of the program, which is to empower women. I took a year off in 2018. And then in 2019, once I had graduated college and was working full time, I was like, you know what? I really loved that program allowed you to pursue something that was greater than yourself, give back to the community, and really challenge yourself in this unique setting that empowers women. So I decided I was going to compete again and never looked back. And then 2019 was when I ended up winning the title of Miss Ohio. And that was super exciting. Like you said, having the Miami University Orchestra play with me. So when I went to Miss America, so once you win Miss Ohio, really the only requirement is that you go to Miss America. You can kind of make what you want of it with your year. But when I went to Miss America, there was an issue with the music and rights to the track that you were using. And so we were pretty much told we needed to create our own track. And I thought, I've worked so much with Miami in my life. Like, they've given so much to me. I've done shows here. I've worked here. I've gone to school here. Wouldn't it be so cool if I had this community with me when I went to Miss America? So I reached out to the Miami University Orchestra and I asked if they wanted to play the track for me. And I gave them all of the requirements. Like, it has to be 90 seconds and, you know, it couldn't have this or it couldn't, you know, X, Y, Z. And they said, yes. So they did it and it was awesome. And they recorded this live track for me and I got to use that track at Miss America. So
where was Miss America that year?
So it was December of 2019.
And where was it, like in Las Vegas?
So it was at the Mohican Sun Resort and Casino in Connecticut.
Okay. I mean, I grew up watching Miss America. My mom always made like a huge deal of it. And like, we'd watch it together every year. And so like, do you feel like it's still the same when you're watching it from all those years past? Or do you feel like there are differences now?
There are definitely differences. It has definitely evolved through the years. So one big thing is they took away swimsuit. So they really tried to tailor the competition to be more about who you are and what work you've put into the community. So it's much more about like your intellect and not how you look. So that's definitely different. The location has switched around. So typically it's in Atlantic City, but we were in Connecticut this time around, which was great. The Mohican Sun Resort was super welcoming and we had an awesome time. I think the coolest part of it all was like actually being on a TV show and to see how all of that worked, because NBC was the ones running it. And it was just really cool to be behind the scenes and watch the producers and the camera operators and know that that's always what's going on behind the scenes. So
I'm not
going to
lie,
that.
The podcast is just like that. As I sit here socially distanced with Jason Williams, the political reporter, and Phil, the amazing Phil Didion, Silent Phil, doing all of the technical work. So I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun. But yeah, you always learn something. You always learn that one thing you weren't expect to learn. And I feel like that was kind of what I learned, is how to make a TV show. There's a lot more that goes into it than you think.
So you do with this now, right? You're making it like you do have a platform now, right? Like, I think people are really familiar with that topic.
Yes.
And for you, tell us, so, it's more than 911. Tell us what you chose and why.
Yeah. So like I said, you have to pick an issue that is important to you that you choose to advocate for throughout your year as a state title holder. And there are aspects in the competition where you are questioned about this topic, you know, to see if you know facts and different statistics, so that you can kind of pitch to the judges what you will do if you are, you know, awarded the state title. I was in a really bad car wreck coming down I-75 in Cincinnati, right by Westchester. It was really snowy outside. I ended up, intersecting with another car, two different cars. And I was ultimately hit, and I hit my head on the steering wheel, and I have a nice Harry Potter scar from that now. And through that whole situation, I ended up having to call 911 on my own and, you know, get the help I needed. I was ambulanced to the hospital. And through that whole scenario, I kind of realized, as a young woman, I know to call 911, but that's really it. You know, there's not really education centered around what to do in an emergency. We're just taught call 911. And so I created Caroline's Crisis Call, which is a program that I take to schools that I've, you know, used online, that I talked to Governor DeWine about. And it's kind of a three-part series here, so I'll try to go through all of them quickly. But the first is I created the facts of calling 911. So it's an acronym that you're supposed to use in a real life emergency to help you. So if something happens, you can go through this acronym as a guideline, so that, you know, when you're in an emergency, you're not thinking, you know, you go into fight or flight. But if you can think about the facts, hopefully it can help you. So F is fake calls are illegal. You cannot make a fake call to 911. So is this emergency fake? No, great, you're good to call. A, assign individuals to help you. So when I was in my wreck, I fortunately was able to get out of my car by myself. And I was like, you know, holding my head because I just hit it and it was bleeding. And I looked out to all of the people that had stopped on the interstate and I asked if somebody would call 911 and people just stared back at me. So I ended up calling 911 myself. But I realized in those situations, even if you are the most injured, you are not the only one in shock. So you are supposed to point at people and assign them tasks. So you do CPR, you call 911. So A is assign people to help you. C, calm, cool, collected. Even though it's scary, try to stay calm because if you are injured and you start having a panic attack, you could further injure yourself. T, thorough. Be thorough when you're on the phone with the 911 agent. I was not prepared to tell details of my location, my injuries, and really have this super detailed discussion with the 911 agent. I thought if you were calling from a cell phone, they could ping your location and send help. That's actually not the case. If you are calling on a cell phone, it goes off of the nearest cell phone tower, and that could be 2 miles away. So you have to describe where you are and your location. And, you know, I'm sitting here on the interstate thinking, I don't know. I mean, I see these two signs, you know, where the road splits on 275, but like that's all I knew. I didn't really even know how to describe my surroundings. So be prepared to give a lot of details and to talk on the phone a lot because they need that information to help you. And then S, stay on the line. So stay on the line until they say it's safe to hang up. And that might be, you know, until an officer has arrived or until an ambulance has arrived, but you have to stay on the line with them because if you hang up, you know, you're not always guaranteed that you'll get reconnected with the same person. And then also stay on the line in case it's, you know, a mistake call. If you find your phone in your purse and it accidentally called 911, stay on the line because if you don't, they have to treat that as a real life emergency and they will call you back. So make sure you stay on the line so you're not, you know, taking up time that they could be, the dispatchers could be spending on an actual emergency. So that's the facts of calling 911.
I mean, I have to tell you, like this resonates with me so much. When I lived in Florida, before I came to the Inquirer, I was in a terrible accident and my car flipped over and I was trapped in my car in like the middle of the median. And
oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
So always wear your seatbelt because I was in my seatbelt like hanging upside down and I felt I was so lucky. But I had to call 911. And even though I was a police reporter at a newspaper, I did not do all of those things. And it was just super scary. And so when you hear things, I do think that you can prepare yourself. Like platforms like this just aren't like, oh, it's a platform for Miss America. It's like it is actual education when you hear it and you might not say, oh, it's staying with me. But then you might think about it later when you need it. And that has stayed with me too with Kyle Plush on like, I didn't know how to voice activate my phone before that. And so that is something I took away from that. And now that I know. So I did not mean to interrupt you, but I just, it is resonating with me and it's bringing a lot of things back.
Yes. Well, and I'm sure you can relate too, you know, being a young woman and being independent and wanting to maintain that independence. And then you're in a situation where you're like, wait, I thought I was educated. I thought I did know. But yeah, it's stuff that you think you know, but until you're in the situation, you realize maybe you don't know everything you thought you did. But yeah, I've heard from friends too, throughout the year, my time with Miss Ohio, that they, you know, somebody they know was having a stroke that was close to them and they used the facts to keep calm in the situation and they used that acronym. So, it's nice to see that people, you know, are using that acronym to help them through the situation.
So there's two more parts, right?
Yeah. So okay. The first half is like the facts of, well, there's three parts. The first half is like the facts of calling 911. And then the second half is I actually used my smartphone. I have an iPhone when I was in my wreck to call 911. So there is a setting called emergency SOS. And if you hit the power button, like the side button, 5 times, it automatically starts calling 911. When you call using that feature, as soon as the call concludes, it sends a text with your location to all of your emergency contacts, and you can set that up through the health app. The location updates every 10 minutes, and you can kind of alert your loved ones or roommates or anybody that, you know, something's going on. So when I was in my car wreck, I actually used that feature. I did not know that it sent the text or did any of that extra stuff. I thought it just called 911. But once I discovered that, I was like, this is so important. I've got to tell people about this because we are always on our phones. Let's use them for good. You know, like these are great tools that we could be using. So it sends the text to your loved ones with your location that updates every 10 minutes. And then your phone locks. And the only thing that becomes available is your medical ID. And that's something you can set up in the health app. So I have a heart condition and I have a genetic condition. And say, you know, I'm unconscious or something happens, like this is so important. Somebody could pick up my phone and see, oh, she's allergic to this medicine. She's this blood type and she has this genetic disorder. You know, if I need immediate treatment, there's a starting point for the EMT. So that's a great feature too. So I always like to go and tell people about this smartphone feature.
I never knew that. Never.
Yeah. Do you have an iPhone?
I do. And now, and I've written a lot about 911 now. So, and I'm surprised I do not know this.
Yes. Yeah, so I specifically like to tell, you know, young college girls about that, because if you're walking home late from the library or something, that could be something that really, really helps in a situation, you know, that you're not expecting to happen. So that's an important thing too. So that's kind of the second part, all of the features you can do with your smartphone, and you can do it for Android as well. So usually I'll go into schools, or college campuses and I'll teach people to do that. And, you know, the emergency contacts that get that text message that you can set up, I've got like 20 on mine because I'm always traveling the state of Ohio. So I'm like, I don't know what part I'm going to be in, like Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati. You know, I don't know who's going to be closest to me if I ever have to send that text out. So yeah, make sure you set up emergency SOS calling on your phone. And then the third part of my platform, and I know this is so long, but it's like as the year has gone on and my time has extended as Miss Ohio, it just like keeps building up and more things keep getting added, which is great. But I actually got to meet with Governor DeWine back in November of 2019.
A previous podcast guest. Go ahead.
Yes. I actually taught him how to set up emergency SOS calling, which I thought really cool about that. I was like, oh my gosh, I got to like set it up for him on his phone. But I talked to him about text to 911 and why that was not statewide, because there are about 8 states that have text to 911 statewide. And I think Ohio could be part of that, you know, progressive movement, because again, there are situations like Kyle Plush where you think, why is texting not an option? That could be something that could save someone's life. I think about young people in the back of an Uber. If you know, they realize the Uber is going the wrong way, it's not really safe to make a phone call. That could be more threatening, but a text would be really, really helpful. I think about domestic violence situations. Again, it would probably be unsafe to make a phone call, but a text could really save your life in that situation. And even rural parts of Ohio, maybe the phone service is splotchy, but you can usually get a text through. I just think that it's something that is so important. And I've been working with the Department of Public Safety now, and we used to have only, and I'm remembering this off the top of my head, only like 20 out of 88 counties had text to 911, but now it's really picking up, and either counties are installing it and it's in development or it's already in place. So it's definitely in the metropolitan areas, but it's starting to spread throughout the whole state, which I think is super important.
So when you're talking about being all over the state, you live in Mansfield now, is that right?
Yes. So I'm in Mansfield, and Richland County is one of the counties where it is in development.
How did you end up in Mansfield?
Yeah. So I used to live in Cincinnati, and I love Cincinnati so much, but I was one of the millennials that was affected by COVID, and during the height of the pandemic, lost my lease and, you know, couldn't continue to take that on. So I moved home with my parents for a bit. But ended up moving to Mansfield in September of 2020 because the theater that actually hosts the Miss Ohio competition in Mansfield, it's called the Renaissance Theater, they were one of the first theaters to safely open up and do socially distanced performances. So I have been working there kind of part-time, doing different shows and contributing in ways that I can. I did the show Cabaret, and then I also did Cinderella, and I got to play Cinderella, which was really fun. And then most recently, I worked on Dreamgirls, which was totally virtual. It was like a film. We filmed it, and I got to choreograph. So it's been really fun to just keep my creative mind sharp and also give back to the Mansfield community after everything they've done for me as Miss Ohio. So I've really enjoyed it. And I've also never lived in a small town before, and I really like it. It's so quaint, and you know, I think that this is how most of Ohio lives, and I'm so happy that I get to be in this community. It's awesome, and such a strong community too. I mean, people are super supportive of each other here in Mansfield, and I just really love being a part of that.
So when is your reign as Miss Ohio over?
So that is to be determined. It is planned. It's slated for June 2021. And hopefully if everything goes as planned, we can move forward and have a safe competition. That's our priority right now, is just to make sure everybody is safe.
Although I feel like you could, like you could do it forever. That you could just now be Miss Ohio and spread the word about 911.
Yes, I know. I'm like, I have so much more work to do. Like, I'm like, I want to make sure that like we have statewide texting to 911. Like, there's so much more I can do. Like, I'm ready. You know, like I want to help with COVID efforts. I've been really big on social media about pushing the mask mandate and, you know, working with DeWine. I did some things for his office at the beginning of quarantine with the stay-at-home orders and, you know, when the mask mandate came out. So I know, I'm like, this is great. I don't have to end. I love it. But I do think the beauty of Miss Ohio is that it's more of a legacy that carries on, and so many people get to hold that title. I think that's what's so beautiful about it, you know? So it does need to go on.
Have you gotten to know the Plush family at all through your work? And they're doing a lot of work around these types of things as well.
I have not. That's actually one of my goals. Because when I first started researching about text 911, I originally remember hearing their story a few years ago, and then when I started doing work on text 911, that was the connection I was really looking forward to. But with COVID and everything happening, I haven't been able to connect with them. But yes, that's something that I definitely would like to do in the future.
Well, great stuff, Caroline Grace. Is there, if people want to connect with you, where's a good place to go? Social media? You have a Twitter handle, or what's the best way to connect with you?
So the best way to connect, I do have a Twitter, but I'm more active on Instagram. The Miss Ohio handle is @MissAmericaOH, and my personal handle is @CarolineGraceW1. And yeah, feel free to send a message. I love connecting with people and just having conversations and learning and, you know, talking with individuals. So yeah, reach out. I'd love to talk.
Great stuff, and really appreciate you sharing your story today and the work you're doing around, text 911. And, just really want to encourage you to, it sounds like you've really made a lot of great progress with that work. And, just want to say we're rooting for you.
Thank you so much. There's still so much to be done, but I'm really fortunate for the connections that I've been able to make, throughout my reign, but still working to finish strong.
Thanks again to Caroline Grace Williams. I really appreciate her passion about such a critical issue that I think we just take 911 for granted sometimes. And, the fact that she's really taking this on is really wonderful. Sherry,
I haven't thought about the accident that I was in years. But I will say, I was getting a little emotional there, but fun fact about me, that was how I knew that I loved Alex Coolidge and that we would get married. So I had to go to the hospital and I broke some ribs, but that was the worst of it, fortunately. And Alex lived in Sarasota and I lived in Fort Myers, and he came and every window in the car broke. And so my hair was long then too. My hair was filled with glass, and he picked the glass out of my hair all night. And then I was not going to decorate for Christmas, and I love Christmas, but I was going home to visit my family, and I thought that's kind of crazy, and I worked all the time. And while I was sleeping, he went to the store, and he put Christmas tree up and all the ornaments.
Wow. That's awesome.
So, I mean, you know him as a business writer, but he's my husband because of that.
And he's a great guy and a great friend to me, too. Yeah. I could see him doing that, too.
All right. So now we have a child. And I think after this podcast, we're recording on Thursday. School's almost over. There is no chance we are going to get out of sledding today because this is the first sleddable snow I can remember in forever. And it is a sad state of affairs because it's like 2 inches. But snow is snow.
And that brings us to our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. The best sledding hills in greater Cincinnati, because you know what? We're known here in Southwest Ohio for being a hilly place. There are plenty of them, but we're going to boil them down to just a handful. Sherry, what do you got?
You know, kind of you can cross the river from Cincinnati. It's right over there. DeVu Park, you know, it's known for its views of Cincinnati for the most part, but hilly, it's a good sledding place. Easy to get to.
I remember one when I was in college, and I've seen it pops up on these top 10 sledding hill lists. And I'm like, yep, no surprise by that. And that's Mount Storm in Clifton. Just a very long hill, just not super steep, but long. And it's a fantastic place to go sledding. I'm sure there are lots of kids up there today.
Did you bring your lunch tray when you were in college, like from the cafeteria, and slide down on the lunch trays?
I did not. We use those. It's so weird to think, like, now, do these things even work? Like those old school sleds with the metal rails.
Oh, my gosh. I know what you're talking about. You know, they always had the red metal.
Yeah, we actually used those. Like, because on our farm, we had a huge hill back in Galpolis. And, I mean, we went up there all the time.
That's what we had. But now it's like, here's your snow disc, and they're plastic, and they move fast.
I got to take a quick side note here because this reminds me of something. My first job out of college was in Columbia, Missouri, which is where the University of Missouri is. I was sports writer then, covering Missouri, University of Missouri football for the newspaper there, Columbia Tribune. And I met a group of friends there, and some of them were still in college. You know, I was a year out, and we were all similar in age. And met a couple guys, moved in, you know, just rented a house with them. And there was like one winter where it was like wasn't snowing at all, and we're like, this is ridiculous. So I don't know how one of the guys figured it out or heard about it or whatever, but there's this thing, like, I don't know if it was even what it was called, but we called it ice blocking. You would go to like a Home City Ice type of place and buy a block of ice, keep it in the, or you'd put like a little cover over the top of it. And you just basically sort of lean back, put your legs up, and you could slide down hills on it. And it was so fun.
That is what's known as the ingenuity of college students.
Yes. And I mean, it was on just a regular grass hill.
Who have a lot of time to do things like that.
Yes.
Right?
So shout out to my friends from Columbia for the ice blocking thing. I haven't done it since, but we did it 2 or 3 times. You got one more on your list, Sherry, that you want to let people know. Is it Stanberry
Park? This was Phil's contribution. He went right to this one today. And you know, the photographers always know where the best sledding hills is. You know why? Because in the morning they get texts. Who can take sledding pictures?
Who can take snow pictures, weather pictures?
So they always know, like, right where to go.
It's in Mount Washington.
Yep.
Mount Washington. Reminds me of those bumper stickers. This car climbed Mount Washington.
So
Washington,
I'll assume, you know, throughout the week that the snow is going to melt. It is Cincinnati after all. But when you want this best sledding hill, Cincinnati.com. We always have those kind of lists.
Yep. We have a hill. We have a golf course near us where they just let, and it's very hilly, where they just let the kids. And I'm like, it shocks me because it's, you know, meticulous golf courses are about. But if anytime there's a snow, like the kids can go, just anyone can go there and sled, and they do. I'm sure the kids will be wanting to do that if it stays the next few days. Anyway, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap. Thanks for hanging in there with us, and we will catch you next week.